Welcome to the Baseball America College Podcast. Today's Baseball America Podcast is sponsored by SeatGeek. Baseball America Podcast listeners get a $20 rebate off their first SeatGeek purchase. Download the free SeatGeek app and enter promo code BA20 today. Now it's time to talk baseball.
Thank you, Dave Slade, and welcome to another Baseball America College Podcast. I'm John Manuel, along with Mike LaNana, Jim Schroeder, Ted Cahill. Brought to you by SeatGeek. We'll tell you a little bit more about SeatGeek and the fine SeatGeek app in a few minutes. But guys, let's just dive right in to this week's college poll and college rankings. Pretty topsy-turvy week, guys. I guess I told you guys I was going to start somewhere else. I should start in this other place. Six new teams in this week's top 25. A new number one as Miami loses a home series to Virginia. Six new teams. Is this the most turnover we've had this year, Teddy? I think it is.
Isn't it?
And it feels a little unusual. Jimmer, you've been compiling these for like 8 years. Feels kind of unusual to have this much turnover this late in the season. Is it unusual? Is it unprecedented? You haven't looked it up.
Yeah, that would take some digging. But yeah, it certainly feels that way. I feel, you know, there have been weeks where we might have four, maybe five. But I feel like a normal week is, you know, two or three is probably about the average. But,
especially this time of year.
We have been doing about three or four lately, and six is definitely the most this year.
It feels like this was the most tumultuous week in the rankings all year. It did start at the top with the University of Miami. I will temper my desire to imitate Jim Morris, but the University of Miami loses a series at home. It's their second series loss of the year. They've both been at home. Right? Florida and Virginia?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I mean, good team, certainly, that they've lost to. But, Mike, we kind of wanted to use this as a jumping-off point for this week's podcast, was to talk a little bit about the ACC. You've seen a lot of ACC games this year. You've seen you saw some more this weekend.
Yeah.
But this league, I guess what we're trying to figure out is, I don't know if it's a good sign that the team that was the number one in the country and was the best team in the ACC all year coming into this past weekend, loses a series at home to a Virginia team that is playing better, but certainly hasn't been stupendous, hasn't been a great year for the Cavaliers this year. Do we think this is a good Atlantic Coast Conference, a better than average year in the ACC, or do we feel like this is more of a squishy ACC year where there's not really a great team? I guess I thought a couple weeks ago this was a really strong year for the league because the bottom is better.
Yeah.
Now, there is that school of thought, but it also feels like maybe the top's a little squishy, to use that word again. I can't decide where do you fall? Good year for the ACC or meh?
I can see both sides of that argument. I tend to think it's a good year for the ACC just because the gap between the top and the bottom. I think the teams at the bottom are legitimately good teams. You know, I've talked a lot this year about how I like Boston College. I've talked a lot this year about how I like Wake Forest and those kinds of teams.
And this was a good weekend for if you like those teams weekend.
Yeah, it was a good weekend, making me look a little smarter with Wake Forest, the second straight weekend. They've beaten a top 25 ACC team with Florida State last weekend, UNC this weekend, and then Boston College taking a series against Louisville. You know, I think I am a little bit surprised. With obviously we all had high expectations coming into this year with Louisville. I am a little surprised that they haven't had the success on the road so far. That's been a big issue for them. They haven't won a road series, I believe, so far this year. So, and then
Teddy very quick to shake his head no, because we've heard that every Sunday for the last 4 weeks on rankings calls. So, and this weekend's another one of those. I mean, this BC series.
Yeah.
My guess, it shouldn't be news necessarily that BC holds down another team's offense. I know that we've seen Justin Dunn really good this year, Mike.
And Jacob Stevens, too. I don't think Jacob Stevens gets enough credit. A freshman, he doesn't look like a freshman. He's a big boy.
He's like two Justin Dunns.
He's like two Justin Dunns smushed together. Yeah. And, he's started on Friday this weekend, and he shut Louisville down. Louisville's a solid hitting club, a very balanced offense. And, the same for Justin Dunn. You know, they've kind of like what Arkansas did with Zach Jackson. They've moved Dunn into the starting rotation from the closer's role, and he's been great. He hasn't missed a beat. He's got the arsenal. He's got a starter's arsenal. With those two, along with Mike King, who's a very solid college starter in his own right, I mean, they're going to you know, pitch well against teams. They don't have the most high power offense, but you know, they're gonna you know, hold their own against some of the top pitchers in the conference. So I'm not super surprised. Obviously, Louisville's the favorite going into that series for sure. But I tend to think the ACC is stronger this year just because teams like Boston College and teams like Wake Forest and even Duke at times this year has had moments where it's played very well. And so, you know, I do the middle of the ACC I'm kind of worried about a little bit. You know, you look at what UNC has done this month. You know, they've had a bad month. They've been 6-11 this month. You know, other than a, you know, a 15-0 midweek win against South Carolina, which was a great showing for them. Other than that, I don't know what you hang your hat on in the month of April if you're UNC.
I wonder what UNC's run differential is this month, because they have 2 15-run victories.
Yeah.
Because they also beat William & Mary 17-2.
Yeah.
But they've had a bad losing month. So their run differential probably says good things about them. We'll talk more about them later, but tell you, I tend to side with Mike that I do think it's a strong year in the ACC, mostly because those bottom teams are better. You have a team like Clemson that's number 10 in the RPI, but 9-12 in the league overall. But I get the sense from you that you view this as a less than great year in the league because there's a lack of a great team. I feel like you've come around a little bit on the league the last couple weeks, but am I characterizing your
No, that's right. I look at the strength of the conference maybe more at the elite team level. You know, it's nice that these traditional bottom feeders are winning some series, but I think they're winning series because the elite teams aren't elite this year. You know, you look at Miami and they've been number one and they were incredibly hot and they've cooled off a little bit now, but you know, you talk to people about Miami and they talk about how it's a more balanced team this year, and it is than they were last year. They were very offensive last year, but you look at Miami and there's not a lot of depth there, and there's often not a lot of depth with the Hurricanes. They have some inherent difficulties in getting depth at that school, but they don't have a ton of depth. And you look at the pitching staff and it's solid, but is that really a pitching staff that's gonna, you know, that you can ride if your bats don't have a good weekend? You know, on Friday night, Thomas Woodry is a, you know, okay college lefty. He's, you know, just in that general character, you know, general kind of player, and he pitches well for them. He has a good track record, but he's not overpowering. Danny Garcia is probably the best prospect, and he's pitching on Sundays, and he's good, but he's not great. And Medavia on Saturdays, again, good. He's not great. So, you know, their bullpen has been really good, but you know, Miami just doesn't have a ton of depth, and Florida State's kind of the same way in their pitching staff. I don't know that either of those pitching staffs are going to be good enough ultimately if you're looking at a national championship type club. They both can hit well enough to win a national championship probably, but at some point those pitching staffs are, you know, especially those starters, I think might become a problem. And Louisville has the depth, but something's wrong there. I mean,
right?
I know I say it a lot, but they have lost. Their four series losses are all on the road. You've got to win on the road. Like, at some point, you got to win.
Something doesn't compute because they are first in the ACC in runs scored. They're second in ERA. They're first in batting. Statistically, Louisville's far and away the best team in this league, the most complete team. They're a good defensive team. They have speed. Feels like they're somewhat efficient defensively. Yeah, Teddy, Jim, you guys, fill me in. What's happened? Why is Louisville less than the sum of its parts?
You know, I really am not quite sure where it's coming from. I think part of the biggest problem, it seems like, from the outside, is that the starting pitching has not been as good as it was last year. That Brendan McKay has taken a small step back. I mean,
which is realistic.
Right. It was probably going to be impossible for him to repeat what he did last year. And Kyle Funkhauser's, you know, he just hasn't been able to get out of that funk that's lasted, you know, for basically a full calendar year now.
And he was their stopper yesterday, to use an old term. But, I mean, like, when they needed him to avoid a sweep on the road, he actually did come through with one of his better starts of the year.
Yeah, and Drew Harrington, to this point, has been, you know, their best starter statistically, and I mean, that was not what anyone was expecting. So I don't know what's going wrong with Louisville particularly. I mean, obviously not a ton is really going wrong. They've only lost nine times this year. But this was a team coming into the year we thought was Florida, Louisville, and the rest of the country. And they are not playing like that right now. And I think that is clouding what I see in the ACC. That, you know, nobody is really taking this by the horns. You know, NC State has been really good at times this year. At times they're a little flummoxing. I think their pitching staff kind of falls into what I was talking about with Florida State and Miami. You know, it's good, but it's not great.
I do think they're the deepest team in the league. I up the top to bottom lineup and pitching staff. I mean, Jimmer, this is a good jumping off point for you because Louisville, first, like, do you agree with me that State is the deepest team? And second of all, does Louisville's road problems that Teddy detailed, they're still second in the RPI.
Yeah.
How much do they have to win a road series to get a top eight national seed? I mean, I still think they're poised to host, but are they, you know, these top eight national seeds in the ACC outside of Miami? And they're not even secure. I don't think any of these top ACC teams have secured one, but you do feel like two or three of those teams are going to be top eight national seeds, right?
Yeah, I would still say three of them will be, just because there's not that many other candidates. But yeah, I mean, the road record for Louisville, I mean, it would be an issue. I don't think it would necessarily preclude them from being a national seed. I mean, they're still 31-9, 14-7 in the conference. If they finish, you know, second place in the division, or if they win the division, I think they'll still get one, even if, I mean, you have to believe they would win a road series to do that.
Right.
I mean, they still have to play, what, North Carolina and Wake Forest on the road, I think we were saying.
Yeah.
So those are, as long as, if they win at least one of those, and preferably both, they probably would be all right. But, I mean, they still have to play the NC State head-to-head series is in Louisville, which may be fortunate for them, but, so, I mean, that's going to be a huge series. I mean, that could be a, you know, for all the marbles as far as who's being a national seed. I mean, they already lost to Florida State, so that kind of gives them a FSU a leg up. But, yeah, I mean the Wolfpack's kind of got to get healthy. I know they're dealing with, you know, they were without Steven Patera for a while. Now he's back, but now they lose Josh McClain with a hand injury. So they've got to work through that.
They haven't had Joe O'Donnell.
They haven't had Joe O'Donnell, who had been one of their better weekend starters. So that's all, you know, you kind of wonder how that might add up. I mean, they've dealt with it so far, but obviously, they got a big game with ECU tonight, Monday night. ECU drilled them last week. So.
Right, another big loss. Yeah.
So I mean, that's a big game, and that's, you know, another good RPI game. I think ECU's in the 20s or 30s right now. They are 30, so that's another good one.
And now a top 25 team.
East and that's Carolina. Now a top 25 team. So I mean, the Pirates, another team that could at least be on the fringe of the hosting race. But those four ACC teams. Right now, I would have three of them. I mean, it's just the RPI is just right now the top eight in the RPI are all ACC and SEC, and nine of the top ten.
And but, some of those teams have better resumes than others, for sure.
Yeah.
Well, it's gonna be interesting to see what we're gonna talk about with regional hosts and that conversations as we get closer to it. I don't think that's any clearer, but those are gonna be hard tickets to get in a lot of places around the country. And if you've ever been frustrated trying to buy tickets like regional tickets online, you know that many sites make it complicated and then try to sneak in huge fees at checkout. That's why you need to try SeatGeek, as we told you about all spring. They've made it easier than ever to buy and sell sports and concert tickets. You know, concert tickets in North Carolina have been a little iffy lately because of things going on off the concert stage. The resale tickets for Pearl Jam and Bruce Springsteen, those weren't helpful because you just had to get rebates. Because they canceled those concerts. But if you had tried to buy Pearl Jam tickets, I think you would have wanted to go on SeatGeek, download onto your phone, and use it to get the cheapest tickets you could get. They've taken all the work and hassle out of shopping for tickets because SeatGeek puts all the tickets available from other sites into one place. You save time and you never miss a deal. And you can even set alerts for upcoming games, and SeatGeek will let you know if ticket prices fall. Even better, every ticket on SeatGeek is given a grade based on value, so you can immediately find those underpriced seats to Charlotte Hornets playoff tickets. Get them now because there aren't going to be very many games left.
It's Blues Blackhawks game 7 tonight.
That's for the Jose De Jesus Ortiz fans of the Baseball America audience. Before you buy, every ticket gets a grade based on value. And before you buy, you can see the detailed maps on SeatGeek's website to see the view from your seat. Best of all, the SeatGeek app is always honest and upfront about price. Unlike StubHub, SeatGeek shows you the full ticket price from start to finish, and it never surprises you with huge fees at checkout. Remember, the Baseball America podcast listeners can get a $20 rebate off your first SeatGeek purchase. It's very easy to do. We implore you to do it. Get your $20 rebate on tickets by downloading the free SeatGeek app. Go to the settings tab and click add a promo code. Enter the promo code BA20, that's BA20, and SeatGeek will send you $20 after you've made your first ticket purchase. That's SeatGeek, and the promo code is BA20. We want to thank SeatGeek again for being part of the Baseball America podcast. And Jimmer, I'm just sorry that there aren't Stanley Cup playoff tickets in this area.
I love that this gives me a window to wedge in some hockey talk.
It does.
That's even if it's only for 5 seconds.
That's pretty much your only chance. If there's a Jimmer and Vince podcast later.
Since Vince isn't in the office anymore, this is the best chance I get.
I'll throw in one more podcast question. Did the Islanders end up winning last night?
They did win in double overtime.
See, I don't stand for that kind of thing. But I do have a lot of Islanders fans in my Twitter timeline. But
Adam Rubin was up.
He was up and excited about that. Yeah. I have a lot of old college friends who are strong Islanders, as I like to say. They were excitedly tweeting about it. But this time of year is tough, I think, sometimes for college baseball to get some footing without the hardcore fans. I think people don't always realize that. That's why the attention always seems to come in May after your NBA gets winnowed down, your NHL gets winnowed down, and now everyone's going to want to talk about Tom Brady. But I do think if you talk about college baseball, you are going to be struck. Any national look at this, you're struck by just how dominated the top of that RPI is by the ACC and the SEC. We talked about the Pac-12 last week and how weak it is. The podcast discussion made me write my column of the Big West. And then this week, guys, we have freaking Santa Barbara get swept by Cal Poly. So I want to pivot to the West a little bit. And then we're talking about the SEC, but I do want to pivot to the West a bit because the West still is not best. It is disturbing to see Santa Barbara get swept.
All's quiet on the Western front.
I agree, Mike. Good World War I reference. Nicely done. This league, these two leagues, this region, who is going to host out West? The Gauchos are not going to host.
Not the way they're going.
They can't do it facilities-wise. That's not going to happen again. The the West Coast Conference, Gonzaga is now leading that league. Gonzaga's not going to host, are they? Their RPI is 51?
Yeah, that seems very unlikely. St. Mary's has a better RPI. They can't host on campus. I don't know what the NorCal minor league situation is. We investigated the SoCal. We've not looked at the NorCal yet.
Now, I didn't even think to ask Coach Valenzuela, but I did talk to Eric Valenzuela about that. He said they have no plans to host. So I don't even think they're exploring the other part of it. Last year, it really took a creative entity like the Lake Elsinore Storm to host. I do want people to remember that last year that was poo-pooed a lot of college baseball circles, but not this circle. We're actually sitting at a circular table. We did not record the podcast at this circular table last year, but in this circle, we were actually hopeful and optimistic about that regional being good, and it was a good regional. And of course, it produced the national champion. The UVA went out there and won that regional and then won the whole doggone thing. I suppose BYU could host. Their RPI isn't sterling, but if they win the West Coast Conference, they do play Gonzaga.
They've already lost to St. Mary's.
Pepperdine, right. But they play Gonzaga this coming weekend. They've got Pepperdine, San Francisco, Santa Clara. They have four league series left. I suppose BYU could host, but that would be a cluster with them not playing on Sundays. I mean, Mike, is there any... where would you put a West Coast regional this year? Would you give any West Coast team a regional to host?
I wouldn't be happy about handing one to any team right now, especially if Santa Barbara can't host. The one thing I was going to say as you were going on there was, it's possible, it was a similar case last year, it's possible Cal State Fullerton could sneak into the mix.
I think right now they're the most likely one.
They're tied for first place in the Big West right now, Cal Poly, and you look at their schedule, they have series against Santa Barbara and Long Beach State both remaining if they do work in those series.
But that's a harder schedule than Poly has, and Poly's already beaten Fullerton. I mean, if there's going to be a host or coming out of the Big West, I think it would be Poly at this point. Ooh. The way they're playing and
a reprise of their 2014 regional host that I completely forgot about.
I mean, and neither one of those teams has good RPIs. Poly's at 62 and Fullerton's at 59. I mean, I think if there's going to be a West Coast host, it's going to be the Pac-12 champion, and it's just going to kind of be reflexive that, that the winner of the Pac-12 gets a host. And whether that's Oregon State, whether that's Cal recovering, whether that's Arizona or Washington State.
I think
State
Arizona's the team.
Arizona, that's where I was just headed. Arizona made its case And
Arizona, which got swept by Utah 4 weeks ago, but has been good since then.
That is
startling. And a loss to Washington, but they did lose to Washington. I don't know what to make of the Wildcats. They're obviously playing much better now, but
well, that's what I wanted to talk about. I mean, like, Arizona was front and center in their Saturday night game against Cal that I think Roxy Bernstein and Mike Rooney still haven't left that ballpark yet.
I watched that whole thing too.
What? You watched all that?
It was a long game.
That was iffy. That was a long game. It was iffy.
Ended around 3 a.m, I think.
Mike, you're a younger man, obviously, than I. That's one more example why. But, guys, Arizona has they sweep through the NorCal. They won 2 out of 3 against Stanford. They sweep Cal. They won the Wazoo series, which, you know, they should do that. They beat UCLA at home. So, Arizona now, still 4 league series left at USC. O-State ball is at Arizona State at home. Oregon on the road. Jimmer, it really does feel like Arizona has the highest RPI in the league. Mm-hmm. Feels like if Arizona finishes first or second in the Pac-12, they're going to host a regional. And that's crazy in Jay Johnson's first season there.
Yeah, I mean, if they win the league and get in, say, the top 25-ish of the RPI, they probably would. I mean, I know the committee would love to have something out there. Even if Arizona has to, like, host as a 2 or something, if UCSB gets, maybe that could be their landing spot. But, I think they're the best bet right now if you're looking for a host west of, west of the Midwest. UW is still in the first
47
place. So their RPI's got more to go. But we know UW has a new park that would be
they
a
would
good
sure
showcase.
Love, yeah, they'd
so
love
they
to
would,
do that.
They would probably love to get one there. But yeah, they're 47th, so they've got. I mean, they would have to finish hot. I mean, Arizona's still. Only 10-8 in the conference, so they do have to.
UW is not going to. The schedule does it favors in terms of winning this conference, but it does not do it RPI favors. They still have Cal, USC on the road, and then Washington State and Stanford, and then at Utah, and most of those teams are sub 100 RPI.
How about this? I looked up in the Pac-12, tells you a little bit about the league, that the top 2 strikeout guys in the league in conference games are Tristan Beck and Kyle Molnar. Both guys who were top 100 guys for us in the high, I mean, probably top 75 guys draft wise last year. I know that Tristan Beck turned down a lot of money from the Braves to go to Stanford. We know Kyle Molnar turned down big money as well to go to UCLA, even though he's a lot more of a firm bet. But those are your two tops, those are your two strikeout leaders in Pac-12 games.
Well, I think that, plus this talk about Arizona and Jay Johnson's first year, is kind of indicative of where the Pac-12 is. It's a conference kind of in transition. There have been a lot of coaching changes.
Yeah.
I think we've talked about that before. I know I've talked about how great their recruiting classes were, how every team seemed to hold on to one or two of their top guys last year.
Right.
Stanford got Beck, and UCLA got Hooper, who has not been that great, but they also got Molnar. It just went on all throughout the conference. And I think the conference, the future looks good.
Right. The freshman class in this league, Eric, Oregon State, we've talked about their freshman, UW with Demers and other, and Graffinino. There are good freshmen in this league, but the upperclassmen across the board in the league, and I'm really looking squarely at Cal, the upperclassmen in this league have either been hurt in Dalton Jeffries' case or just really haven't come through.
Yeah, when you talk to scouts out there, and I mean, this has been going on. It's not new to this spring. We knew this going into the year that this would be a bad draft year, and that's now that has rolled over into it being just a bad year college baseball for these teams.
I guess the other guy I'm looking at squarely here is Bobby Dalbec. But Bobby Dalbec,
he's having a decent year.
He's having a great year pitching.
Yeah.
He's had a great year on the mound. But this guy, this is one of the more inexplicable college baseball years I can ever remember by an individual player. First of all, to flail so uselessly for Team USA as he did last summer at the plate. Then to go to the Cape, what did he hit, 12 home runs in 2 weeks? Something stupid. 8 home runs in
it
2 weeks?
It was 12 home runs. I don't know how many of those were in the final 2 weeks once he got back, but it was 12 home runs overall.
So 12 home runs overall. He comes in as really the top power prospect in the country among college hitters this year. It doesn't mean that he was the top prospect, but the most power. He was our first team All-America as a utility guy. He started 3 times down the mound. He has 13 wins and saves out of 17 appearances. He's like Arizona's Red Auerbach cigar. He's a guarantee of victory for them on the mound. It's very strange. I know that he's pitched well, but did anyone see anything close to this coming with Bobby Dalbec? Could anyone have seen this coming? That he was going to be like basically Arizona's most important player, but as a pitcher, not as a hitter? He's hitting 221, and it's a soft 221.
You know, there was a major question going into this year about what Arizona was going to do on the mound. They lost a lot there, and
right.
there's a lot of innings that were going to be available. And you know, so that he has become one of the most important players, I don't think is all that surprising. You know, he pitched well last year when he pitched. But the way that he's been used, the versatility that he's showed has been very impressive. He's
already 8 innings shy of what he did last year, innings-wise.
I wish I remember where I saw the stats so I could call it back up again. But, he's gone more than 100 pitches a few times, and he's, gone one-inning bursts a few times. Like, Jay Johnson is just using Bobby Dalbec wherever, however, and Dalbec is succeeding no matter what role Jay puts him in, and I know Johnson has wanted to start him, and sometimes he hasn't been able to because he's felt like he's needed to use Dalbec out of the bullpen. But he's definitely been one of their best pitchers, no doubt. And they're not where they are without him pitching.
It's a startlingly strong season for him on the mound, at least to me. Mike, what else did you see out of Arizona this weekend? What else floated your boat about the Wildcats? How are they in position to kind of steal a regional host spot in Jay Johnson's first year?
Well, I just saw that wild 13-inning game, but...
I think Cal was pretty unimpressive in that game.
Yeah.
It seemed like, to me, watching the parts of that game I watched, that Cal, we could see why we ranked Cal in the preseason. You could see their talent.
Yeah.
But like Roone said during the broadcast, Mike Roone just said, something's off with this Cal team.
Yeah.
And it's evident they are... Just from a timing standpoint, it feels like a team that in basketball runs its offense, but the shot goes in and out. They just can't. They can't buy a bucket right now. They can't buy a hit when they need it. They can't make a pitch when they need it. And Dalton Jeffries and Ryan Mason are obviously didn't pitch this weekend either.
Yeah.
So I guess I summed up Cal's problem. What's Arizona doing right when you see them?
Yeah, well, the one thing about that game is they just didn't quit offensively. I mean, every time Cal, every time Cal scored and punched back, they punched right back too. Dalbec hasn't hit, but they've gotten contributions from Zach Gibbons has been very good for them this year, and Ryan Aguilar, he had the big 3-run home run off of Alex Schick, which that was
right.
Kind of an unusual situation for Schick to make his debut at that point in the season. He's missed the entire year with a knee injury. But, I think they've been, a solid offensive club for the most part, despite Dalbec's struggles. It is strange to see the kind of year that he's had. And, they've pitched well enough. I don't know that they're going to have an ace out there that's going to, blow the ball by you. But, Dalbec's obviously been huge out of the pen for them there. So
And Utah finally lost a Pac-12 series this weekend. So to Oregon State, I guess that's the other team. RPI be damned. I mean, if Oregon State wins the Pac-12, guys, are they going to host a regional? Even if they're a 2-seed, I mean, that RPI is pretty low, Jimmer.
Yeah, I have to look at try to pull up what their schedule is. But, I mean, if they finish strong enough, you figure it would probably climb high enough to like
their schedule is decent. I mean, the run-in, they still have Arizona, so that's a good one. They have Stanford this weekend. They have Oregon, USC, UCLA. So those are some of the better RPI teams in the conference. So, I mean, it seems feasible.
If the path is there, I mean, they have to play better than, they're 8-7. I mean, they did beat Utah, but Utah's still 14-22.
Jeez. Yeah, that's iffy.
And it was just 2 weeks ago they lost to Wazoo. So, they did what they had to do. But, so yeah, the path is there for them if they take care of Stanford and Arizona, and so there's enough RPI opportunity there, but I mean they still have to show more than what they've done to this point.
I'll tell you what also throws me off is just you look at the conference RPIs on WarrenNolan.com, and the SEC and ACC are very close at 1 and 2. The Pac-12 is right there with Conference USA, the Big 12, and then the Big Ten's. Not too far off, but Pac-12, Conference USA, Big 12, there's not a big difference there. I guess what I'm saying is that geography seems to be the only thing that would argue the case for the Pac-12. We haven't talked about the SEC yet on this podcast. We also haven't talked much about Conference USA. I don't feel like on the podcast this year, at least not when I've been on it. We do have a lot of Conference USA teams that have been ranked in and out of the rankings, and this week we ran up Southern Mississippi, and that was with good reason. They won their series with Rice. They were basically 26 last week, Teddy, Southern Miss was. We ran them up 4-14 this week. That was a dramatic move, mostly because anybody else in the top 13 was just kind of made us shake our heads this week. And, you know, we had Rice that we didn't want to fall too far down, but they are behind Southern Miss, and Southern Miss just beat them head-to-head. Those two teams are the class of Conference USA right now, but that's a deep league. It doesn't feel like anything settled in that league, but did Southern Miss convince you this weekend that they're the best team in that conference?
Well, I don't know about convince. They are definitely the team to beat right now. They have, they're in sole possession of first place. They and Rice went into that series, tied it in the standings, and so they now hold the one-game advantage on Rice, and they'll have a chance to consolidate that a little bit this weekend because they play Florida Atlantic, which is third and two games out. So if they can go into Boca and get another series win, they're going to be in great shape.
That was a weird week for FAU. They beat Miami midweek, but then lose the series.
It was a weird week for two in a row. Yeah, and it was a weird 2 of 3, I think.
2 of 3, okay.
And it was a weird week for Southern Miss. You know, they got blown out by Tulane in the midweek, and then they come back and managed to win the series against Rice. So it's a strange conference. Rice's pitching is very strong. Their hitting is not. Right. And I didn't realize quite how bad their hitting was until I was reading Jim's weekend preview. He previewed the series, and he detailed just how poorly they were hitting coming into the weekend. And that kind of bore out. Southern Miss held them to 6 runs. Rice held Southern Miss to 7 runs. But it was a very good series. When I talked
to raised seams kind of series.
It was. When I talked to Scott Barry last night, you know, he noted that there were only 13 runs. They were all 1-run games. There was only one error the entire weekend. I think that probably was one of the best played series all year anywhere in the country was Rice and Southern Miss.
In terms of just the high caliber of play and clean baseball.
Yeah. I love clean baseball, which is not always easy to find in college baseball. So when you see a series that has just one, you know, 3 1-run games, they're all low scoring,
right.
No mistakes for them, really, just the one error. That to me is a great series to watch.
And the thing for I can't get past this for Southern Miss is it Cord Cockrell who's got the Jake DeGrom lookalike hair?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that is not Jake DeGrom stuff by any stretch, but he at least emulates the hair.
I think he pulls off the look a little better personally because he has the scruff too. You know, I think.
I tell you what helps you pull off the look like that is if you throw 99. So let's give it up to Stetson's Jake DeGrom because Cord Cockrell does look, you know, he looks older than say a fifth year. He's a fifth year senior, right? I mean, he's a transfer from Louisiana Lafayette. He's an older guy, but that team really does pitch and Rice pitches. So I guess I'm not surprised. It feels like both those teams are sustainable, Teddy. Now are both those teams regional hosts? I mean. Southern Miss certainly seems like they should be if they win this league. If you win the number 4 RPI league,
yeah.
Probably should be a regional host.
Yeah, I think they've put themselves in that kind of position, and Rice still could be as well. They both have decent RPIs, and you know it's a good league, and somebody has to host because, right. Again, the West is not going to pick up its usual 3 spots, so somebody has to pick up that slack.
Nobody wants it. Nobody wants it this week. I think Conference USA deserve some of it. Let's back up and go to the Southeastern Conference. This is the best league in the country, according to the RPI. You've got Florida, Texas A&M, and Mississippi State, 1, 2, 3 at the top of our rankings. Guys, Mississippi State just kind of, this is kind of what they've done all year, isn't it? Their resume remains the best resume in college baseball. Is it not? I mean, they had the ugly sweep against A&M where they give up 30 runs. Outside of, and then they had the opening weekend where they lost 2-4.
Yeah, FAU I still today. Think Florida has the best resume. They have that series win against Miami and the series win against A&M.
Those are very good series wins.
Mississippi State, and their losses are like, I don't want to, you're splitting hairs here, really, but they, they didn't get blown out like Mississippi State did.
They did. And that weekend is inexplicable to me for Mississippi State. But I didn't realize until this weekend that Nathan Lowe, their first baseman, is the older brother of, is it John Lowe, the guy who's a draft prospect in Marietta this year?
Oh, yeah.
What's his first name?
Josh
Lowe. This is his older brother. You know, Nathan Lowe's apparently family is family friends with my wife's uncle, who's been asking me about him for 2 years when he was a junior college, and now I'm finding out that they're brothers and all this kind of stuff. I guess my point is, this team's, it does feel like they don't have Florida's depth. I just feel like Mississippi State, again, like, offensively...
Oh, it's deep.
They have a lot of different ways to beat you.
It's deep.
And that's what's played out all year.
And I think it's deep on the mound, too. They haven't really...
They don't have... But not Florida.
They're definitely not Florida deep on the mound. They've been trying to figure out their Sunday starter spot.
Right.
But they have talent that's definitely going to be very good. Florida has talent that is very good. But top to bottom in the lineup, Mississippi State is strong. You have Jake Magnum... freshman going completely off. He's hitting 422. Yeah. You have Jacob Robson, and you know, it just goes all the way down. Reed Humphreys, Lowe, you mentioned, and I really like Eli Marrero. He's not hitting quite so well, but he's a freshman catcher. You know, I'll give him a pass on some of the average there.
When I see them played on whether it's SEC Network or wherever, it just feels like those guys play with energy. They do have, I guess they're like an NC State's lineup, only I think a little bit better. And that top to bottom, any of those guys can hurt you. I guess what I'm trying to figure out with them is just, I can't figure out, like, do we judge them by their ceiling, or do we judge them by, are they this team that could be like a number 3 or 4 national seed but lose a regional at home? Are they that because they don't have a star? They feel like they're like a better version of NC State.
Well, I will say
that... They do have Dakota Hudson, obviously.
Well, that is a concern right now, because Dakota Hudson, for the first 2 months of the season, was absolutely lights out. And it's now 3 weeks in a row that Dakota Hudson is not lights out anymore. And this is an increasing concern, I think. I don't think this is just a thing that's happening. I think that... I haven't talked to many people about this, but... Dakota Hudson now in his last 3 starts has a 7.85 ERA. Ooh. And a whip of over 2. And he has thrown 67 innings now, which is a career high,
right,
even when you include his summer ball.
His season is very reminiscent of what Chris Stratton did for his career track. It's very reminiscent of Stratton's junior year.
Hudson hadn't really been able to crack the rotation there. His first couple years he'd been more in the bullpen because of command problems. He just hadn't thrown that much. So now he's thrown more, and he started so good. It was 0.92, a whip of 1.027, 56 Ks, 18 walks in his first 7 starts. And now, I mean, he has faced really good competition the last 3
right.
starts. That is definitely part of it. It's LSU, A&M, and Florida. Those are 3 difficult teams, but they're going to need him to get back to being what he was before if they're going to, you know, reach their ceiling.
So now they're at Alabama and Auburn and home to Mizzou and Arkansas. None of those 4 teams is guaranteed of being a regional team. In fact, I would say right now, Alabama is the only one of those teams that has a shot of being an at-large team.
Yeah, they're the only one that would, yeah. Arkansas maybe has an outside chance, but right now Alabama's the only one that would.
I mean, Mississippi State's RPI is a little bit lower than you would think, considering what I feel like is a really stout schedule they've played. But, you know, Mike Jimmer, do you guys feel like, I mean, I feel like they should be favored their next 4 series, shouldn't they? If they win those 4 series, I mean, they're only 10-8 in the SEC right now, but it feels like Mississippi State's on track to be a top 8 national seed, or it has that definitely within its control.
Yeah, I would say it's... Yeah, they can play their way into it. I think I still think right now I'd have them behind Florida, A&M, and South Carolina. But South Carolina still has to play A&M and Florida, so they get Florida this weekend. So if they were to lose those series, then that would open the door for a team like Mississippi State to get back into the top 8. Those 3 that I'm talking about are 1, 3, and 4 in the RPI right now. So that's
right.
A pretty big gap. And they're obviously have a better conference record than Miss State at 10-8.
Well, we have 8.
But that's,
you have 8 definite SEC teams that are going to be regional teams: South Carolina,
yeah.
Florida, Vanderbilt, Kentucky from the East, A&M, Ole Miss, LSU, Mississippi State from the West. That leaves these other kind of 6 teams that are in contention here, and Georgia and Alabama have the highest RPIs of those teams. But Tennessee, I guess, had the best weekend, did they not?
They did. I mean, they beat Vanderbilt, and you know, of those teams, that they definitely had the best weekend. It was a weekend they needed.
They desperately needed.
They'd been close in a few series. They came close to beating Ole Miss back on SEC opening weekend.
Right.
They came close against Auburn. I mean, they really needed that, and you know, it's a rivalry too. So that, you know, that's makes it extra special for them, I guess. But you know, to beat Vanderbilt is definitely a good win for Tennessee, and maybe they'll be able to build on it now as we move forward. And you know, they're going to need to, because they have work to make up.
They've got a really tough end of season schedule, though. They still have Florida, LSU, and then at Georgia to end the year.
Right. If you're going to, I mean, their road series are winnable road series, in that it's Missouri and Georgia. I mean, it could be tougher, but your home series, they're 12-7 at home. That record's not likely to get better when you have LSU and Florida at home. And they had Nick Senzel play shortstop this weekend. I give kudos to Tennessee that they won that weekend series, even with Senzel not having a great weekend. You know, I think what he had, two hits the whole weekend. He wasn't great this weekend. I mean, I know that every team that plays Tennessee is going to say, like, we're not giving Nick Senzel anything to hit. It does feel like they've figured out ways to score, even when he's constantly pitching.
Their offense is way more than just him. It's been true all year.
Right.
They have a good offense. It's on the mound. That, you know, especially without Kyle Serrano now down with TJ for a few months. They've got to figure their pitching out. But they can hit. That's a team that definitely can hit.
Feels like Warren and Cox pitched well for them this weekend. You know, and that, of course, that's been the bugaboo for the program for several years, which is just so stunning that that's Dave Serrano's MO is pitching. And I guess I thought they'd find a few more Zach Godleys in this time. He's like my Tennessee pitching personal cheese ball the last 5 years. I'm not quite sure why. Now, Mike, what's your take on the rest of these other teams, like Alabama and Georgia, these other kind of SEC bubble teams?
Mm-hmm.
Are these guys, you know, how would you handicap those teams? And Georgia, it seems like they had a chance this weekend to get a significant notch on their belt, as Robert Tyler goes out Thursday, beats, I need to get the win because it was a long extra inning game, but they beat Florida in the opener 2-1. They weren't able to steal one more, which I guess, you know, kind of tells you a little bit about the Gators. What's Georgia's prognosis going forward? This is a junior class of guys that were pretty heavily recruited. They got some of those guys like Tyler and Wren into campus. They haven't quite been able to break through. Do you feel like they have a chance to get a signature win, a signature series win going forward?
They're
going to
have a couple opportunities. You know, their next series is at Vanderbilt, and then they have Ole Miss after that. If they can
win. The SEC affords you these opportunities.
Yeah, so if they could win one of these series, you know, maybe, you know, never say never. And they have beaten Alabama in a weekend series, which they have, I guess, in their advantage. You know, I do like Bama's resume overall a little bit better, I feel like. And, you know, they've been a team that's been in our top 25 at times. And I feel like just with their pitching staff, they're built to win a little bit better at this point. But, you know, so I'd give them maybe a slight edge going forward. But, I mean, Georgia's going to have opportunities here with these next two weekends. Should they be able to squeak out a series win, you know, they could put themselves on the radar. And they finish against Tennessee, too. So, you know, those two teams will be battling for...
That could be very interesting.
Yeah,
interestingly, Georgia has a significantly better RPI right now. They're top 30, and they're 28, and Alabama's at 41.
Yeah, that seems odd. I guess that series winning in South Carolina has to mean a lot. South Carolina leads the SEC.
That's huge for sure.
Third in the RPI. Teddy, you're going to go down there and see this series this weekend. Let's look ahead a little bit in the podcast as we wrap up. Florida, South Carolina, I mean, like, South Carolina's pitching, Schmidt and Webb have been outstanding on weekends all year. But this weekend they're matching up with a Gators team that's got the best rotation, in my mind, in the country. How do you handicap that series? I mean, I've got to guess that you're giving Florida an edge there.
I mean, yeah, I don't know that I can't imagine picking against Florida. But South Carolina's going to be tough. They're tough at home. And it's a good team. It's a really good team. It's going to be one of the, you know, Florida's already played Mississippi State. They've already played A&M. So it's not like they haven't played. They played Miami. So they've played good teams before. It's going to be another team, you know, on that level. It's a deep lineup. Gene Cohn is, Just set the program record with a 27-game hitting streak.
Yeah, it's crazy.
Yeah, he's on fire, which has kind of picked up because John Jones has cooled off slightly. He's no longer hitting almost 500, which that was going to happen at some point. But, I mean, they've got Destino, they've got John Jones, they've got Dom Thompson-Williams. You know, it's a deep lineup, and Florida has the pitching to handle it, but they're going to have to prove it again, they're going to have to do it again that – and they're going to have to do it against a pretty tough rotation. You know, Clark Schmidt has been nails all year, and Braden Webb has
been... That 1-2 punch is...
Yeah.
That's not one that... I mean, you could see the talent with those two pitchers coming into the year, but obviously Webb's a freshman, albeit a... What is he, 45 years old? He's like my age. You know, he's had injury issues. He's older.
He hadn't pitched in basically 2 years, and right. Clark Schmidt was mostly a reliever last year.
Do you have any worries of fatigue with these guys? I mean, this is the 10th week of the year.
With every freshman pitcher, I've worries this time of year. I mean, you're getting to the point where your high school season is pretty much wrapping up for most of these kids. So from Webb's standpoint, yes. Schmidt, a little less so. I suppose it is a concern. I don't remember how many innings he threw last year. He's well past whatever it was.
Blown past it.
Yeah. And he's on pace to throw like 122. They're using him a lot. But he seems... I'm less concerned about him having been through college, having been in the college weight room and everything, than I am about Webb, who, again, hadn't pitched in 2 years, basically, and is, just a freshman.
The other thing, it's always unusual. I guess it's less unusual in college, but just to see the left-handed closer... and that like that.
Well, it's definitely not unusual at South Carolina. Where the bullpen is named for Michael Roth.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. Well, I mean, who was the left hand of the Yankees drafted? Tyler Webb. Is that his name?
Yeah, Webb.
I mean, they've gone this route before. It's not new for them. It does seem like Tyler Johnson's been really good for them in middle relief of late. Again, we focus on those top two starters for them with good reason because Schmidt and Webb have been so good. But it feels like they've developed a little bit more answers in their pitching staff as well all year. So, I mean, we talk about Florida's pitching depth and how, their fourth, fifth, sixth, seventh, quote-unquote, starters, guys who are in their bullpen, would be weekend guys for most other teams. I feel like South Carolina's pitching depth is definitely nothing to sneeze at either.
Yeah, definitely. Johnson is the better prospect than Reagan, and he'll probably close – well, I don't know if he'll close next year, but he'll be a good draft pick. Scouts are interested in seeing him next year, and they like what they've seen already this year. And South Carolina moved Adam Hill into its rotation, another freshman, and he's pitched pretty well in that Sunday spot. So there is definitely good pitching over on South Carolina. That's part of the reason why this is happening.
I guess it's called Founders Park now is what they call it. It was Carolina Stadium, but now it's Founders Park. That joint's going to be rocking this week, and I've seen a couple of Florida-South Carolina games in person there. I feel like there's a nice baseball rivalry between those two, Kevin O'Sullivan and Chad Holbrook, where I believe peers in the ACC. I think their careers overlapped by at least 1 year in 1990. I don't know if Kevin O'Sullivan ever threw out Chad Holbrook. I'd love to see that right now.
Did you see...
Traz dropped a few ticks on the 2080 scouting scale for speed.
The South Carolina, I don't know exactly what happened there, but Chad Holbrook raced one of the players and beat him. He raced one of their first basemen, and Chad...
I can tell you Chad had wheels as a player. Chad was very fun to cover when we were both students at North Carolina, and was with his teammate Paul Shuey in the booth this week for that North Carolina Coastal Carolina game, and Paul Shuey had good stories about Chad Holbrook's speed. Yeah, he did not know that his former teammate Mark Kingston was now a college baseball coach. He knew about Chad. He didn't know Mark was coaching at South Florida. He was like, oh, that's cool.
Yeah, you could go over to the South Carolina official Twitter account and see Chad Holbrook beat Ross Grosvenor in a foot race. I think it was a 60. I'm not positive.
I'm going to take a look at that. last thing, guys, the Big 12, we should touch on it. Was it a great weekend in the Big 12 when your two standard bearers both lose series? But I guess I'm almost like trying to figure out. I was pretty excited about Texas Tech, the way they played, the move they'd made, seizing hold of first place in that league. As a team that just went to Omaha 2 years ago, they go to Texas, and Texas has had a brutal year. Brutal. And they didn't. And speaking of brutal, what was it, 17-1 was the final score of that rubber game this weekend?
Yeah. Run ruled in Sunday.
That's no good. What do you guys make? What is there to make of the Big 12 conference? Is any of these teams? Mike, I'll start with you. Is any team in the Big 12 in your mind an Omaha threat? I mean, do any of these teams have Omaha talent? I mean, first of all, we thought TCU would be one of those teams all year, but I'm starting to lose a little faith in the Horned Frogs.
Yeah, they've struggled a little bit of late. I still think of all those teams, they have probably the most talent and probably the most Omaha capable. I do like Oklahoma State too, who we just brought back into our top 25.
Right.
You know, they don't necessarily jump out as far as raw tools, you know, draft wise, but they're, you know, a veteran team, and you know, I like their pitching. I think they have a legit ace in Hatch, and you know, I think they have a deep bullpen too.
They play Texas Tech this weekend at home.
Yeah.
I mean, this is really like, you know, these two weekends are pretty much it in the Big 12 for the rest of the country to pay attention. Yeah. If you're not a Big 12 fan, pay attention last weekend and now this coming weekend. TCU played at OK State. They lost the series.
Yeah.
Now they got Texas Tech coming home. I mean, I'm a little stunned. I guess I thought TCU would be better, Mike, and they really haven't.
Yeah.
They don't really have a big statement weekend, do they?
It's still the Houston College Classic.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, they did lose a lot from last year. You know, they were going to have some ups and downs this year. But, you know, I think overall talent-wise, and they've dealt with some injuries too, not having Traver and guys like that. So, you know, they've had to battle through some things. But I don't know. I still like, of all those teams, I still feel like they're the most dangerous when it comes to postseason time.
I guess they are. I mean, like, it's a good point. They had how many pitchers drafted last year in the first three rounds? Like four? And they lost Traver, the best returning pitcher they had.
And they lost, you know, much of their starting lineup too. So
I'm definitely not backing off them. I think they're still really good. They've had a couple shakier weekends. This is, you know, absolutely. This weekend was not great, going on the road to Stillwater and not winning that series. But if anyone from that conference is going to do it, I think it's them. And I think it's, you know, I still have them in my eight for Omaha. I'm not backing off that. I think the coaching there is good. The players are good. I feel good about them come tournament time. The one thing I want to say about Texas Tech, you know, having just mentioned concerns about freshman pitchers in general,
right.
Texas Tech is running out an all freshman rotation, and it's worked to this point. But at some point, at least one of them, you would have to figure is going to hit the freshman wall the coaches talk about. Maybe it happened this weekend. Maybe that's what that was. And it's how they respond to that is going to be interesting.
The crazy thing about this conference right now is looking at Texas. I mean, they've taken series against both Texas Tech and TCU to this point. And, you know, you look at how they played in the beginning of the season in non-conference play. I mean, swept in four games by Cal. So that's looking a little bit worse. Lost a series to UCLA. Lost a series to Tulane. I don't know.
Texas is still under 500.
Yeah.
It's played a very stout schedule, but they're still not even a top 100 RPI team.
And they have Oklahoma State coming up next.
So that Texas Tech series sweep, Jimmer, how much does that damage Texas Tech's chances to be a top 8 national seed? Like, if they were to win the Big 12, it felt like they could have been a top 8 national seed. But
I think if they win this weekend, they still would be on course to be. I mean, certainly this hurts. I mean, they're down to 15 in the RPI, so that's, you know, shaky. But it would bounce back if they win this weekend. But, yeah, I mean, I think it's, I mean, I agree with Teddy. I still want to believe in TCU. But I don't, it's going to be tough for both those teams to be in the top 8. I think I've had them both in the top 8 the last couple of weeks. But I think that looks less likely than where we go along here with TCU's 21 in the RPI. So they would have to finish strong.
I still feel like I do believe in TCU when it's all said and done. But I'll believe more if they win this series this weekend. You know, I want to believe, to use the X-Files phrase. Last Big 8, top 8 national seed team I'll throw out there that we haven't discussed, Coastal Carolina.
Mm-hmm. They're under the radar, but they are in that mix.
They have three straight road series, one of them being at Georgia Tech this weekend, out of conference. Feels like if Coastal Carolina wins that series and takes care of business against Liberty and Charleston Southern, and they kind of have owned Liberty over the years, feels like Coastal Carolina, like this weekend's a huge series.
Yeah.
If they win a road series against an ACC team, it feels like that's going to really help their case to be a top 8 national seed. And there's nothing that they want more, not just to host a regional. They've done that before. But But when they had their best team in whatever 2010,
yeah,
LaStella and Motter and Rico Noel and all those guys, Cody Wheeler who just got released, Anthony Mayo, that team's problem was they had to play a super regional against South Carolina, and that was a great super regional, but South Carolina was just a hair better.
Mm-hmm.
Feels like if Coastal's ever going to get its desire to go to Omaha, they have to be a top eight national seed, because otherwise you're going to get sent to South Carolina in a super regional, and that's asking a lot. Doesn't mean they couldn't win it, but they'd rather play someone else at home.
Yeah, I was talking, I threw this out on Twitter last night, that this does feel like a year where if there's going to be four national seeds from one conference, so this is kind of heading that way if there's going to be a year for it. I think, but if there is a team that would get it instead of a fourth ACC or SEC team, I think right now would be Coastal. They're 11th in the RPI. They have a top 20 strength of schedule. They're only 5-5 against the top 50, but this weekend would be a big step for them if they can win a series at Georgia Tech. They're dominating the Big South. They do need to win this weekend, this tonight rather. It's High Point, the rubber game of that series. But I think they're 11th in the RPI. Lafayette is the other team that could, but they're still second place in the Sun Belt, so that would be an issue. They've got to get past South Alabama, which is so it's doable. South Alabama's kind of sliding back a bit,
and they do have the head-to-head series still.
Yeah, so they've still got their shot there, but they're behind South Alabama.
They're four games back. So. They have a lot of work to do. Whereas Coastal,
Coastal controls its destiny basically.
I like Coastal's team in that first look. I will say Michael Paez at shortstop, he was iffy on defense. I didn't think that was a great-looking defensive team. Remillard at third base looks very good for a third base. I know their coaching staff thinks very highly of them. I like their depth in their bullpen. They've got left-handed and right-handed options back there. Morrison's been outstanding. Austin Kitchen, the left-hander for them, has been outstanding. It was a good look against North Carolina. There's physicality there with the Coastal Carolina. They can bang the ball as well, but I wouldn't want them in a super regional coming to my ballpark. They would have a chip on their shoulder. But if you also are looking at it nationally, if you were a team that won a regional and you had to go on the road for a super, would you rather go to an ACC team, an SEC team, or Coastal? You'd probably rather go to Coastal. Yeah, that team that hasn't gone to Omaha and hasn't broken through yet. So that team's going to be fascinating to watch, because have to imagine how much it would mean to that program. They're going to the Sun Belt soon, and this might be their last year in the Big South, right?
It is, yep.
Last year in the Big South, that would mean something, I think, really significant to a guy like Gary Gilmore, who's built the program from scratch, built the ballpark, as you detailed last year, Jim. And if they could get to Omaha in their last year in the Big South, I mean, that would be a monumental achievement.
And they really want it, and they really want to host in that ballpark.
Yeah, that's why they built that ballpark.
That ballpark is amazing, and if they do host down there, it's going to be an electric atmosphere. Like, you as an opposing team probably would want to go there versus SEC or ACC, and they're all going to be pretty good environments for a super regional.
Right.
But that place, I was there on opening weekend, just on a Sunday, and it was a huge crowd, and they were all into it. And so I can only imagine what it would be like if it was a super.
But it's 5,000 versus if you went to, say...
Right. Yeah, it's half the size of South Carolina.
I was going to say, if you went to Starkville and it's 12,000... And you know you're trying to pitch. And wait a minute, do I smell barbecue? You know, like, just a little bit different deal. So
you might smell the beach though, in Coastal though.
Kramer would rather play his super regional at Coastal than he would at Starkville.
The beach,
exactly. Honestly, Starkville versus Myrtle Beach, advantage Myrtle Beach. You know, maybe it would be like taking an AC an NBA road trip in Atlanta where there's too many distractions. You know, and imagine for a college kid. Opposing college coach rather go to Starkville where there are no distractions. Coastal Carolina, there's some distractions there. All right, on that wonderful inside note, we should probably wrap up this podcast. Guys, thanks for everything. Thanks to SeatGeek for its sponsorship of the podcast. And thanks to Dave Slade, who has more to tell you about our college baseball podcast. So long, everybody.
This concludes our program. Visit BaseballAmerica.com for more podcasts. Today's Baseball America podcast was sponsored by SeatGeek. Baseball America podcast listeners get a $20 rebate off their first SeatGeek purchase. Download the free SeatGeek app and enter promo code BA20.